to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I met the most remarkable man and dog back in March when I went to the Southwest Readers Fest here in Fort Myers, Florida. He is a former Marine in a very elite unit who was in Afghanistan fighting the war. And when he met his new best friend, Fred, I'd like to tell you that this book won't bring you to tears, but I'm not so sure that's true. He wrote a book about rescuing Fred, a stray dog, and how they ended up actually rescuing each other. I will tell you that Craig Grossi was the most popular author at Southwest Readers Fest this year, and that's saying something, considering Scott Turow was there and J.T. Ellison and several others who will also be on this show. It is my pleasure to welcome to Authors on the Air Craig Grossi and his best friend, Fred, who is from Afghanistan. Welcome to Authors on the Air, Craig.
Oh, thank you so much. We're really, really excited to be here. And it was really great to meet you in person in Florida. We had an awesome time at the festival down in Fort Myers. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful event. And I will tell you that every year, if someone is there with a dog, they will draw the attention. Last year, Colin Campbell and George were there, and and your Fred is a lot smaller than George, so and he was very chill too. I was telling Craig that when I was watching him sign all the books, Fred was kind of taking a break from the hoopla, and he was sitting outside the fence, and the festival is very close to the water. So he had his eyes closed and his face upturned to the breeze and just letting it wash over him in his star splendor, which he's a pretty chill dog, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's very chill. You're not a squirrel or some kind of other woodland critter. You know, he's pretty chill. And he knows how to find the right mood for whatever situation or place that we find ourselves in. He seems to always to know just the appropriate amount of energy.
You know, I'd like you, please, if you would, to tell listeners how you and Fred met and a little bit about your journey to take him home to the States. And before I start, may I say thank you very much for your service to our country. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and some of the remarkable things that you're doing now. So tell us about Fred.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I met Fred in the unlikeliest of places. It was in October of 2010. And I was an intelligence Marine. I was attached to this team of recon Marines, which recon Marines are kind of like the Marine Corps version of the Special Forces. And they're just real high-speed guys that get sent into some of the most dangerous places. And it was my job to just kind of stick with them and collect intelligence based on, you know, the areas we were going to go in. And this particular area was in Helmand Province. And it was called Sangin. It was a district within the province called Sangin District. And, you know, we were told a lot of things about it there and from the people that had been there before. And just from what we've been able to observe from the units that were there, none of the information we were getting was really putting our minds at ease. You know, the Taliban had a lot to fight for there, and they had a lot of resources there. The unit that was trying to hold some ground was having a really hard time, and they were taking a lot of casualties. And so we were really going in at best to be a distraction to try and take some of the pressure off this other unit that would be further south. But we would be really just defending ourselves for the entire time we were there. And so we were expecting, you know, the worst. And unfortunately, that's exactly what we got. You know, we were just under siege for the better part of a week, consistently just facing mortar attacks and really organized assaults from the enemy and from the Taliban. And in the middle of all that, I would catch little glimpses of this funny little dog kind of kicking around this compound that we had made our base, you know, just overnight. And I instantly just thought he was very interesting. Most of the dogs over there, unfortunately, have a really hard go, and they're they kind of ended up being products of their environment, and they're unapproachable and really nasty and very, and some of them are very big and it's kind of scary. Fred was the exact opposite of not just the other dogs that were in the area, but he was also just the opposite of the environment that he was in. He seemed to you know, it wasn't that he was naive, you know, it wasn't that he didn't realize where he was at, you know, but it was that he didn't care. And he chose to kind of carry himself with this confidence and this positivity that just by looking at him was kind of, you know, really intriguing. And so when things calmed down after a little while, the Marine in me kind of had to take a back seat to the 10-year-old kid that always wanted a dog growing up that, you know, it kind of won over for a moment. And I found myself approaching Fred with a piece of beef jerky. And as I got, you know, a couple feet from him, I could see he was, you know, just really undernourished. And his fur was covered in dust and mud and grime. And then he kind of had the infestation of bugs around his neck and on his head. They were these big, you know, crazy looking, like they looked like flying ticks, and they were kind of infested all over his head and neck. And I was kind of had one of those moments where it was a rational thought. I was like, man, you can't just walk up to a dog like that. He's not going to be excited to see you. But I kind of kept moving a little bit further. And as I got just a couple feet from him, he started to wag his tail. And that, you know, that has had a profound impact on me over the years. And in that moment, you know, it really did too, because it was the last thing I expected this dog to do, who had absolutely nothing to wag his tail about.
Sure.
You know, but for him, that was all he could do. You know, it was a choice. He could show his teeth and kind of make it clear he wanted to be left alone, or he could make himself a little more vulnerable by wagging his tail and you know, kind of encouraging me to come a little closer. And just that, you know, just that little motion has made all the difference in his life, but mine also, because I think, you know, just, you know, all the challenges that we face every day, you know, we're kind of faced with a similar choice. You know, we can, you know, wag our tails, or we could show our teeth, you know, and more often than not, when we find the strength to wag our tails, the outcome is a lot better. And it's come to something I call now, stubborn positivity, which is just kind of our own little philosophy and our own little, way of kind of summarizing Fred's approach to life and how it's affected me. And now, you know, thankfully through our book, you know, being able to share our story, it's we're getting our message across to readers, which is really exciting.
It seems to me that, you know, one thing we do not hear about when we hear how many people are killed and injured and maimed is we forget that there are pets also, there are animals who are also killed and injured and maimed during war. You just, because the human toll is so great and so horrible, but there are other creatures who suffer too in war-torn areas. And that's really sad to me that it, you know, of course you're going to think first about the human loss, but being a pet owner myself, you forget that there are pets who are also abandoned, neglected, killed, and everything else. I want to say a little bit about you since you've left. You were a recipient of the Purple Heart. When you returned from Afghanistan, you worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency, and you also went to Georgetown University. What did you study when you went there, Craig?
I went to Georgetown after working for the government for a little while and figuring out that I was kind of stuck. And going back to school was the last thing I thought I'd ever want to do. I didn't have the best relationship with school as a kid. I liked it for what it was. I liked, you know, if making friends and socializing were classes, I would have gotten straight A's. But it was just an environment that I struggled in, and I worked really hard, but I just couldn't get anywhere. And I was kind of left in the dust in terms of the academic side of stuff. So, getting into Georgetown was great, and it was a big challenge to be in that, you know, that high of a caliber of an academic environment. And the program that I got into was a Bachelor of Arts in Liberal Studies, and they gave gave me a concentration just based on my experience with the military and the government. It was kind of an international affairs kind of flavor to the degree I was
wow.
Getting after. But it was, we did a lot. My program was really heavy in writing and reading and I figured out, you know, within that first week of class that I really like to write. And, you know, it was even in an academic setting when I was, you know, arguing a paper or, you know, had to be at, you know, fit a very certain format, I still enjoyed the process of writing. It was through that time at Georgetown that I really realized that, you know, that I had this story to share, and that, it, you know, it was kind of my job and kind of my duty to do that. So I credit my time at Georgetown with a lot, but one of the more significant things was really just igniting kind of my love of writing.
How interesting that you had never thought about writing in the past, I'm assuming.
It was, looking back, you know, it was the first thing I was ever good at as a kid. You know, that wasn't catching or throwing or running or jumping.
Sure.
I remember as a young kid, I would write stories, you know, make up little stories about my teddy bear and like the adventures you would get into, you know, when I was a kid, you know, at night, you know.
Oh,
and,
cool.
I would, you know, I remember liking that. And I remember loving that. And I remember also, you know, just sitting around the dinner table with my family, and my plate of food would get cold because I would be telling my family about something funny that happened at school that day, you know, or something that I did, you know, at hockey practice or something like that. And I loved storytelling. I loved like conveying this, you know, and like this energy and kind of painting a picture for people at a very early age. And so, no, I never really thought of myself as a writer until I went back to school and realized, you know, that I liked it and that I was pretty good at it. So it was kind of just a natural kind of path back to it, I guess.
Interesting. How long were you in Afghanistan with Fred?
Mm-hmm. So Fred, with Fred, I probably was about 2 months. Like, so we found him in early October, and he was home. So actually less than 2 months, because he was home before Thanksgiving. He had Thanksgiving with my dad back in Virginia. So not too long.
Fred was home before you were then.
Uh-huh, yeah. So that's a great – I always like – we do a lot of speaking events now, and I love to share the story kind of verbally with people before they read the book. And one of the funny things about it is I always wanted a dog as a kid, and my dad would give me the classic, you know, I'm going to end up walking him, you know, kind of response.
Right.
And that's exactly what
– Sure enough,
exactly
he did.
What happened years down the road. Yeah, my dad's walking – this Afghani dog that I sent home 4 months ahead of me. He's walking him around the neighborhood until I got home to take care of him. Yeah. So, and Fred and my dad have a very special bond. It's really cute. But I love giving my dad a hard time about that. It's really funny.
That's so funny. You know, you're not supposed to take animals home from the when you're in the military. But
mm-hmm.
I know, I hear that some animals do get to come home, but it's not really by any conventional means, is it?
No. So, I mean, especially in our case, because it was just the nature of the way I was operating in Afghanistan, was I would spend about a month, you know, a month and a half in the field, living, you know, on the battlefield. And then they would take us out and give us like a 2 week break back at this very, you know, established base called Camp Leatherneck, which is, you know, it had Wi-Fi and air conditioning, and, you know, hot food
mm-hmm.
and showers and stuff like that. And they'd give us a break back there, and then we would go back out in the field for, and so you're coming and going a lot from there. And so that added to the logistical kind of challenge of it. And then also, you know, it was against the rules.
Right.
And so there are now, thankfully, there's an organization called Puppy Rescue Mission.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nonprofit here in the States, but if you're overseas and anywhere overseas, and you make an animal friend, a cat or a dog, and you want to get it home, you can contact them, and they'll walk you through the steps and help you raise money to get them vaccinated and quarantined and kind of go through that process. And you can even kind of get permission from your command in certain cases, where they'll give you the blessing. But in terms of in Afghanistan in 2010, the rules were very clear. You know, you weren't supposed to adopt or have a mascot of any kind. They really it was beyond discouraging it. It was really just against the rules. But in Fred's case, you know, it was he was too amazing and too special for me not to want to at least, you know, take the risk. And Fred made the choice actually for me because he ended up following me to the helicopter, which, you know, was kind of for me the last sign that I needed from him, you know, that he really wanted to get out of there and really, you know, that he really was my dog. You know, the fact that he wasn't scared off by the noise and the dust and rocks that get kicked up when a helicopter comes down to pick us up at the end of our mission, that said everything to me. So, I did my part. I stuffed him in a duffel bag and we ran on the helicopter together. And that's a really, you know, powerful part of our book and our story is just the fact that, you know, he would have run through a forest fire if that's what we were doing. He didn't care. You know, he belonged with us and we were going to do whatever it took to get him the life that he deserved.
Well, I'm not going to tell everyone. I don't want you to tell everyone because the story is really pretty amazing. But I want to point out before we move on to a couple other things that I want to talk to you about. You've done something very special and very poignant in the back of your book, and that is give in memoriam to some special people who were with you. And I think that was pretty cool of you to do, and I bet their families appreciate it too.
Yeah, I talked to my friend Justin and my friend Sean, and we're both killed. Just two of the most incredible people you'd ever want to meet in a lot of ways, and they live their lives, you know, just for everybody else around them. You know, they were those kind of guys that just wanted to do everything for the right reasons and to serve others in as many ways as they could. I mean, Sean was the kind of guy that would that would babysit, you know, so that his buddy and his wife could go and have a night out, you know, and he was also the kind of guy that would take your shift on the rooftop, you know, because, you know, he knew you were tired and he could handle it. And Justin was just, you know, one of those guys that very quietly would do the most amazing things and do them for the right reasons and never seek anybody's approval or attention. You know, he knew what he had to do and he was going to do it. And so it's the least really that I could do is to have, some pages. And what's really great is that I'm so proud to be close to both families and I wasn't going to write their stories without their permission. And I actually asked them both families to write the pages. So when you read those pages, those aren't my words. Those are the words of Justin's mom and dad and of Sean's mother, which is, that's incredible. That means the world to me because I don't want anybody to think for a second that, you know, I'm writing this book or sharing the story for my own personal, you know, glory or anything like that. It's really, you see very quickly when you start to read the book that it's about me and Fred, but it's about so much more. And the people that have come into our lives are so incredible. And that's who I'm most excited about, you know, to talk about and share. So thank you for bringing them up. It's great to talk about Justin and Sean.
You're welcome, and I think it's pretty amazing that you put their stories in your book. I want to move on because you did an amazing thing for this country with your service in Afghanistan, but it hasn't ended there. You work with a couple other programs now. One is called the USA Warriors Ice Hockey Program. And the other is the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, TAPS. Mm-hmm. Will you tell us about those programs and some of the other things that you're doing now, please, Craig?
Sure.
Because I think maybe Fred helped you turn in that direction, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Fred is, he's influenced my life after the Marine Corps in a lot of ways. He still is. And I think one of the biggest ways is reconnecting me with, you know, what it is to serve, you know, and just because I'm out of the military doesn't mean that I have to stop serving, and that, you know, there are opportunities everywhere to do that. And just one of the ways is just my confidence, you know, it's just having Fred and knowing, you know, knowing that Fred is a part of my life has just given me kind of the confidence that I need to look for those situations and kind of take myself out of my comfort zone. You know, and honestly, the USA Warriors, that's not exactly out of my comfort zone. I've been a hockey player my whole life. But what's really great is to see these guys and girls who maybe have never played hockey before, and mm-hmm. they've decided, just like veterans, you know, we're always looking for a way to make things harder. But they, of all the activities they've chosen to do, like, you know, with their injury, and some of them are missing, you know, a limb, or some of them have had major surgeries. They've chosen to take up ice hockey of all things, you know, and to go every week and skate with them and watch them pick up the game, you know, at their own pace. And then, you know, unfortunately, we've been so busy with other stuff. I haven't been able to go as often as I can, but now going back after months, you know, and playing with them, we just played a tournament in Chicago and they were skating circles around me. And it was guys and girls that, you know, the last time I saw them skate, you know, they were just learning how to stop and start. And now they're passing a puck and they totally understand the game. And I think that's been so, you know, for whatever amount of work I've put into that program, I've gotten, you know, way more out of it than I could have ever put into it, because it shows
me how things,
you know,
work like that, isn't it?
Yeah,
when you put yourself
really
in service of
yeah.
others, it happens
exactly.
like that. What is the TAPS program?
TAPS is great. So TAPS is an acronym. It's Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, and it's all no cost to the families, and it's grief counseling for the families of our fallen servicemen and women, and also first responders. And it's regardless of the circumstances of death or passing. So, I mean, it could be, you know, your distant uncle, you know, that served in the 70s and he passed away years later from something totally unrelated to his service, but you want to find a way to celebrate them or grieve them, you know, and you can contact TAPS and go to one of their seminars. And it's everything from something like that to you know, very, very extensive work with, you know, children, the children of the fallen, who have a lot of questions and you know, are growing up without their father and their mother, and they do these great camps where, you know, they're very interactive and they just kind of allow everybody to understand what it is to grieve and to find their own way and their own path in that. And that's, you know, I'm really proud to do anything that I can with TAPS, because the families are the ones that I think often feel like they've really been left to fend for themselves.
Yes.
And so it's a really great organization that's like all over the country now, which is really cool.
What else are you working on?
Yeah, so now we've made Maine our home, and the people up here have been incredible for a lot of ways for a lot of reasons. But we've been connected with the warden of the Maine State Prison, and we've started to go some of the inmates, some of the staff who run a dog rescue. So some of the inmates are training just rescue dogs in basic obedience and stuff like that to make them more adoptable. And then there's a veterans block. They call them pods. But it's a veterans pod of inmates who have all served our country, and just spending time with them has been really incredible. And then learning about a different program they have through America's Vet Dogs, where they're training these veteran inmates are now training puppy labs to be service dogs for people who have disabilities, and other veterans now will benefit from the work that these inmates are doing. So it's, you know, on so many levels, it's doing incredible things, you know, and it's been really fun to go up there and spend time with everybody involved in the program. And I'm looking forward to, you know, to continuing to do that. And we're traveling. We're getting ready to, we just did 6 weeks on the road, and everywhere from, we were started in Maine and went to Chicago and D.C. and Florida, and hit a lot of military bases and schools for signing engagements. And and we're getting ready to head to the Midwest for more speaking engagements and book signings and school visits, and we're thrilled to be able to do that. So we have a lot on our plate, but you won't hear any complaints over here. We're really, really excited.
I bet not.
I'm
assuming Fred acclimated very well when he came home. Did you ever find out what kind of a dog he is?
Yeah, he did. So he acclimated, pretty quickly for considering. And it was really, just about exposing him to as much as I could. We lived across the street from a dog park in the first couple of months when I got home. And I just wanted him to socialize as much as he could. He had a lot of energy, and he still does. But in terms of, what kind of dog he is, I kind of like the, how ambiguous it is. I like hearing people's assumptions and guesses, but I think one of these days I'd like to just organize like a little campaign, and maybe we can raise money for a shelter or a rescue, and everybody can take a guess and make a bet, as to, and make a donation through kind of wagering what the biggest slice of the pie of Fred's genes might be, and we'll see. We'll all figure it out together, what kind of dog Fred is.
Yeah, you have to set for doggy DNA, right? Do a doggy DNA test or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to write another book, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm working on it. Yeah, I have a lot more stories in me, and I think, we're going to do all of our travels and through some of the new connections we've made since this book has come out. We're going to continue to use that momentum, and I've already started to write a little bit, and the more I write, again, it just feels like what I'm supposed to be doing. So yeah, we're gonna keep that going.
Feels natural to you now, right?
The name of the book is
Craig and Fred, A Marine, A Stray Dog, and How They Rescued Each Other. It is available in booksellers everywhere. It's a delightful book. There are great color photographs in there, pictures of Fred and Craig and where he came from and where he is now. I will say that it is very rare to have a debut novelist who writes nonfiction and has gotten, so many 5-star reviews, almost perfect across the board. I just want to warn you that not to fall apart if you ever get a 1-star review. You have to get your 1-star review cherry popped at some point.
Yeah,
and then you get it over it. But you have just across the board, people have fallen in love with this book. There are so many reviews on here that I can't even, it's great story from the first page to the last page. Triumph over despair. Best read for me in a long time. Wonderful story.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Dogs. What a gift for humankind. Awesome book. It goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, it does. It's incredible.
It was such a pleasure and an honor to meet you and Fred when at Southwest Readers Fest. I hope one day you get to come back down here, and when you write your next book, I hope also that you will do me the honor of coming on the show again.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah, no, that goes without saying. That would be an honor on my end as well. So,
Can you please tell everyone where to find you and Fred on the web, please?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, so we have a really enthusiastic and fun presence on social media, and the easiest way to find us there is Fred the Afghan. So it's all, and that's our Instagram and our Facebook and our Twitter, and our website is actually fredtheafghan.com. So it's just fredtheafghan.com, and you can reach out and say hi, or if you want to schedule us for a speaking event, anywhere in the country, we do our best to make it happen. And we're excited to be heading out to Colorado in June. So if there's anybody out west that wants us to come and speak, just feel free to reach out, and we'll see what we can do. And there's also, just in case we forgot to mention, there's also a young readers version of Craig and Fred for ages 8 and up, which is really, really exciting to be able to reach a younger audience with our story. So we'd love to come back to Florida. Also, we had a great time down there, and everybody was really, really great to
especially
to come out
in March. You're there in March in the most beautiful weather instead of being in Maine, freezing.
Oh, yeah.
So nothing wrong with that, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Craig Grossi,
yeah.
I wish you all the best of luck. You certainly deserve it. You are an inspiration.
Thank you.
And to me and to, I know, everybody who came in contact with you, and I'm sure you'll continue to be. Thank you so much for being my guest today. And have
thank
fun
you.
On the road.
Great to be here.
Does Fred bark at all? Does Fred bark?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He can be loud when he wants to be. Yeah.
can you get Fred to say hello to us?
Oh, I don't know about that. Fred, come here, bud. Fredo. Where is he? Who's that? There we go.
I want everybody to know Fred is not the lone dog in the house either.
No.
Fred has a very prissy looking companion in the house. So,
do
they get along well, I'm assuming?
Oh,
they're friends?
Yeah, they're best friends. They're very much brother and sister. And Ruby is
good.
Ruby looks like a little fluffball, but she's very tough, and she's definitely got some Boston in her. She's got a lot of attitude. So, yes, they're a great pair. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Craig Grossi, and I wish you all the best in the world.
Thank you so much. It's great to be on. And definitely stay in touch. We'd love to talk
to you. Absolutely.
Again.
Thank you so much, Craig, and good luck. Yep. Have fun on the road. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so much. All right, bye.
And this is our show for today, folks. I'm so glad that you were with me. I hope you go and get the book, Craig and Fred, A Marine, A Stray Dog, and How They Rescued Each Other. It's from William Morrow. You're going to love it. Thanks for being with me, and thanks, Mom and Dad.